I'm Dr. Linda Papadopoulos, and this is The Psychology Behind. And I wanted to talk about the fact that we assume that more is better. And maybe, just maybe, if we wanted less, we'd be happier. I think about this often. I think about it every time I buy something new and there's nowhere to put it and things sort of feel crowded in my wardrobe. I think about it every time that either me or I'm at a friend's house and we talk about how much, you know, food we throw away and leftovers. I think about it every time I feel stressed because I feel I should be doing more or having more. And I wonder where that idea comes from. So this is what I want to explore today.
In life for free, but you can give them to the birds and bees. I want the money.
The fact of the matter is that we do live in a world that conflates having more stuff with having more happiness. And that's in everything, right? It's from the food we buy, to the many pairs of shoes we own, to the number of followers that we have on social media. Everything about how we engage with our world screams more. It has to be more. More is better. We celebrate people for their accumulation of wealth. We compile rich lists, we have rankings, and we even measure the progress of nations by calculating GDP. Even new constructs in our society, things like social media, that success is measured by more. The amount of followers that you have, the more you have, the better. The amount of time someone spends on a certain website, the more time they spend on it, the better that website is, clearly. It's all about the accumulation of more, more money or more success or more followers. And because of this, the notion has become so ubiquitous that we actually very rarely stop to question it. But the truth is, when you look at this, there's a lot of research that looks at how much money you actually need to be happy. And study after study after study shows that once we have sufficient food and shelter and clothing, once the basics are covered, right, so that you know that you and your family have somewhere to stay and need and you feel comfortable, that actually those further material gains do very little to improve well-being. There's a great researcher named Tim Kaser who's done a lot of work on materialism and money over the years, and he would actually go beyond this. His research suggests that people whose value generally centers on the accumulation of wealth face a greater risk of unhappiness. So he thinks that materialism actually undermines well-being or perpetuates feelings of insecurity, making people feel kind of less than, indeed less free. I think this is something that I certainly personally have felt over the years. My dad always used to say to me, be careful that your possessions don't end up owning you. And I think this is a really important sort of way of conceptualizing things, because we do that thing, don't we, that we work really hard to buy the house, and then we buy the house and we're happy, but then we think we need a bigger house, so we work a little bit harder to have a bigger house, and we get that house, and then maybe we have to work even harder, so we end up spending less time in that house we worked so hard to buy. And it doesn't have to be a house, it can be a car, it can be clothes, it can be holidays, but we kind of buy into the idea that the more that we have of something, the better we'll be. But in actual fact, sometimes we end up becoming beholden to the things that we've bought. We know that debt is a huge issue for people. We know that the more debt people have, the more likely they are to experience things like, you know, depression and anxiety. And in fact, we know that when they're in that situation, the less good decisions they're going to make around how they spend their money. And I think this part of more really feeds into that vicious cycle, right? This idea that I don't have enough, so I feel bad, so I feel I should spend to have more, and then I feel bad because I feel I have less. That's a really worrying thing. And I think in the day and age that we are so constantly exposed to what everyone else has, I think we also lose perspective. And I think that's a big issue with more as well. You know, up until, you know, 5-6 years ago, we weren't exposed to everybody's holidays, everybody's new handbags, everyone's picture of their great yogurt sundaes that they're having for brunch. Yet now we are. And so we always feel like we're playing catch up. And I think that essence of more comes into it bigger and louder than ever. So maybe with, you know, the start of the new month, when you step back and you kind of reassess where you are and what the new month holds ahead, maybe it's time to think about whether or not more actually equals better. And what I want to do is give you 5 things to do to help you think about that in a constructive way. Number 1, practice gratitude and enjoy the simple things. I think it's so important to make a point of focusing on the things that you may not normally notice that make your life better, or happier, or even easier. I always think we're so quick to curse our luck when something bad happens. We're like, ugh, of course I missed the bus, or ugh, of course they sold out of my favorite latte. But rarely are we as quick to acknowledge when things go our way. Research shows that getting into the habit of looking out for the stuff that you are grateful for will actually make you feel happier. It will help you gain perspective, and it'll give you the chance to value things that you might otherwise not even notice. So I do this thing where I carry around on my phone, I have a little file for things that make me happy. And every day I make a point of writing one thing down. And over dinner, I've always done this with my family, my husband and my daughter. We talk about what's the best thing that happened to you today. And we do that because, hey, what else you talk about over dinner? It's always a great conversation starter. But also for me, I think it focuses on our minds to look out for the good. And I think there's so many reasons out there to look out for the bad, right? We're constantly in the news and in the media kind of worrying about this and that we need some practice and some help to kind of figure out what's going well. So try it. I think you'll find it useful. Number 2, learn the difference between an impulse and a need. Now, wanting something doesn't mean you actually need it, right? In fact, it doesn't mean it'll make you happy. So next time you have the impulse to buy something, question how you think it'll impact your life. Is this something that you really need? Like, will it genuinely kind of, I don't know, enrich your life? Will it make you happier? Because it might, right? So maybe you're a writer and getting a new laptop will help you, you know, write more. Great. Maybe you're a writer, but, you know, getting a great new journal will help you write more. I don't know. Whatever it is, make sure you ask yourself the question. Is this about sort of like a fleeting desire, or is this about a genuine enhancement to my life? Now, if the answer is yes, this will really improve my life, then by all means, go ahead. But if you're not sure, then don't feel you have to give in to that impulse. Instead, recognize that impulses aren't commands. They're just temporary feelings like any other, and they will go away. So acknowledge them, but know that you don't have to act on them. They'll pass. Number 3, meditate and reflect. Meditation doesn't have to take long, or doesn't even have to always be about kind of, you know, clearing your mind completely. Instead, you can use it to simply rebalance and relax and gain perspective. So getting into the practice of meditating, even for a few minutes each day, will help give you a sort of clarity of thought, right? So, and by that, I mean, your thoughts won't be cluttered, you know, with it, you know, the feelings of impulses and emotions and convoluted ideas that might get in the way of decision making. That clarity of thought will help you in turn more effectively assess your needs and your values and your desires. So getting into the practice of meditating even for a few minutes each day will help give you a clarity of thought, which in turn will actually help you more effectively assess what your needs are. And that then will mean that you won't act on your impulses so directly. Number 4, contemplate if the here and now is actually maybe enough. Our need for more comes from the feeling that the present somehow is not enough. We put our happiness on hold until we have whatever thing it is that we've convinced ourselves will make us happier in the future. It's the new job, it's the new dress, it's the new car. It's always something that we don't have in the here and now. And as a consequence, we might actually lose the ability to see what is in front of us right here and right now that can give us that sense of happiness and well-being that we're striving for. So taking the time to contemplate the notion that actually, you're already good enough, that you already have enough, and that you can find happiness in the present rather than postponing it to some arbitrary point in the future when you have more, is key to getting on top of this. And finally, number 5, stop comparing. A big problem with wanting more is that we lose sight of what it is what we want, and we just decide to have what somebody else wants. And again, we live in an era where we're so exposed to what everyone has that maybe we're not asking the right questions. Maybe your friend is loving going on 6 different trips a year. Would you like that genuinely? You know, maybe you're someone that prefers to spend their time doing something closer to home or doing something more creative, something more sporty. It's your life that you're living, and wanting more of what someone else has is not going to make you happier. It's just going to make you try and keep up with the Joneses. So try and step away from the comparing and get in touch with what it is that really makes you happy. I really hope you find that useful. Do write in and let me know. I always love hearing from you. The Psychology Behind was produced in conjunction with Audio Boom. Please make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any of our new podcasts, and you can get it from Apple Podcasts or wherever it is that you get them. And please don't forget to rate the series if you like it. I always love hearing from you, like I said. It was great to be here with you today, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week. Till then, bye-bye.